Welcome to Whipple's Press Box Podcast, where we discuss the latest topics in the professional world of sports. Enjoy our exclusive interviews with athletes, coaches, insiders, and fans. And now, here's your host, Gary Whipple.
The Green Bay Packers have advanced to the NFL playoffs under coach Matt LaFleur in five of the last six seasons. They appear on the brink of making it six in 7 years. Greetings, I'm Gary Whipple, and I am absolutely delighted to be joined today by John Papadopoulos, the outstanding broadcaster from ESPN and lacrosse, and one of my favorite sports broadcasters in the state, and looking forward to having a riveting conversation with him in the next half hour or so. So, John, welcome.
It's good to be here, Gary. Thank you for having me on. A lot going on right now, but thank you for having me on.
Yeah, isn't it crazy? Christmas holiday season is just an absolute zoo, isn't it? I mean, between work and family and God knows what else, you know.
Well, and it sneaks up on you, doesn't it? All of a sudden, it just hits you.
Yeah. How's the weather up in La Crosse before we delve into our podcast here?
Well, it feels pretty warm considering how it's been the last couple of weeks. I mean, it's the sun's out and it's 25 or 30. It feels like it's spring here. It's a Wisconsin spring day here. People are walking around in hoodies and light jackets now.
There you go. Yeah, I was out in Denver last week, and the day the Packers played the Broncos, it was 61 degrees in Denver, right? It was 9 degrees in Green Bay.
Right.
And I'm sure the Packers are upset they lost, but at the same point, where would you rather be working that day?
Yep. Well, the weather swings out there so much. I mean, it could be 5 degrees 1 week, and then it's 60 or 70 in the middle of the winter. It's a weird kind of weird part. I lived in that part of the country for about a year. Montana was my first full-time radio job. So 25 years ago, we're talking now, 30 years ago even. And I remember moving out there. It was about 15 below the week I moved out there. It was in the 60s within a couple weeks. So just wild swings in that part of the country in the wintertime.
Yeah, well, you know, everybody I talked to out Denver, the natives, they go, but we have 300 days of sunshine. And incredibly, that's most of any state in the country. I didn't know that, but pretty well. What a neat city, too. I really becoming more and more fond of Denver the more I go there. So got some strange people, but, hey, you got strange people in Wisconsin, too, don't
we? It's a little different out there. I was out there about 3 years ago, and it's, yeah, the people that live out there, not all of them, but some of them are pretty interesting. Yes, indeed. Leave it at that, maybe.
The operative word, interesting.
Different vibe out there, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's get down to business here. And we got a ton of things to talk to in the next 30, 40 minutes. And obviously, the Packers have playoff aspirations. They are currently in the eighth and final NFC playoff spot. They have a 9-5-1 record, but the Lions are still breathing down their necks at 8-7. The Packers have two regular season games. They win one of them, they're in. They host the Ravens on Saturday at Lambeau Field, and that's going to be a really intriguing game. And then they go to Minneapolis up in your neighborhood the following week. So your thoughts on first game one against the Ravens?
The first thing I'll say is that I think old friend Aaron Rodgers did everybody some favors in Green Bay, because the fact that Detroit lost that game yesterday, that changes all of this. You know, if Detroit had won that game, I think this is a much more tense situation going in. But really, all you need now is a Detroit loss or a Packer win. Either one gets them in. So you got four cracks, right? You got four games between the two of them. But had that game gone the other way, you would have needed two of four things to go your way, which the odds are a lot less. I think the Baltimore game is interesting because right now we don't know who's going to be playing quarterback for the Packers. You hope it's Jordan Love. We'll see how the concussion protocol goes. It could be Malik Willis, but he's also hurt. And Clayton Tune right now is a guy that might be a possibility. You can't totally rule that out. It's a weird game to even think about. And on top of all of it, Lamar Jackson is day-to-day, although I think he's going to play. So I think this is the toughest one. And these last three, even, I'll say, even including the Bears game they lost, because Baltimore's got everything to play for. They will be mathematically in it on Saturday, because Sunday, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in their division. They're the first ones to play, so they'll have a shot mathematically. This is a playoff game for them. They have to win this game to have any shot to get in, and then they'll need some help on Sunday. So they're going to come in guns a-blazing. I think if Lamar Jackson's even close to ready, he's going to play because it's a playoff type of a game. Derrick Henry is still one of the best running backs in the league, and he's having another good year, and the Packers can't stop the run right now. That's their biggest weakness, or one of their biggest weaknesses. So I think this is a tough one. I really do. Now, if Jordan Love gets through the protocol, gets a day or two to practice, I don't think he needs more than that, then I think we got a ball game. And I even like the idea of Malik Willis, but he's got a shoulder problem, which, you know, I don't know if that impedes his running ability. I don't know if that impedes his throwing. If he does play, we don't know. So that's the big question. But I think if Jordan Love is cleared and good to go, it should be a great game. But I think Baltimore is going to be tough because they have a lot to play for. And again, the Packers don't stop the run. At least they haven't lately. And the Ravens have a great run game.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this has really been a bizarre season. I mean, not saying that we haven't seen bizarre NFL season before. We obviously have. But to think that Kansas City is no longer in the playoff picture, I mean, it's mind-boggling. This has been the most dominant team in the last decade, and they're a pretty darn good team, and they're out. And now to think Baltimore might be in that same situation. I mean, these are two teams that when the season began, you thought could meet in the AFC Championship, and now neither team is. And part of it's got to do with the injuries, but from my perspective, Father Time just caught up with the Chiefs. I mean, they got a lot of aging players on there, especially their better players with the Ravens. It's been injuries too. And you were talking about Lamar Jackson. I was blown away. I think it was last season. John Harbaugh said he was coaching the greatest quarterback ever. And, you know, I started laughing, but then I started thinking, you know what? The guy's, what, 27, 28? He's got a couple MVPs. He just might be when it all unfolds. He's got a good, you know what, 6-8 years left, but they got to win Super Bowl for him to obviously get into that discussion.
Well, I think for him, the big thing is health, and then that discussion can be pretty legitimate. Lamar Jackson is a very underrated thrower. You know, Think about him as being such a great athlete, but his ability to see the field, the accuracy, it's a very weird comp, Gary, and I talked about this, and nobody will say this, or it's kind of a weird thing to say, but if you just pretend Lamar Jackson can't run at all, which is hard to do, and he's just a thrower, you know who he reminds me of is Kurt Warner. You know, he's got that, he doesn't have a rocket arm, but he's got that beautiful looking throw. He's so accurate the way he leads his guys, like Kurt Warner in his prime. That's the kind of, he throws like Kurt Warner. Now, we don't think about that because he's bigger and he's more athletic, and, you know, his career got off to a hot start early, but he's a fantastic thrower. He just is. He sees the field well, and really he doesn't have to run much anymore. He doesn't do it like he wants to because he doesn't have to. But the question with him is health. It's a lot like Joe Burrow. You know, you look at these guys and say, if this guy can go 5 or 6 years and be relatively healthy, it's a Hall of Fame potential career. But it's a big if with Lamar. It really is. And he's got to win some big games. He was going to win last year. I mean, that at least the game that they got knocked out, he was playing so well. And remember, Andrews, the tight end, dropped the ball in the end zone, that pass that was
to him. Dan, I don't know who was more upset about that, the Ravens or me, because I had them going to the Super Bowl.
I think it was a 2-point conversion, and Lamar would have had a shot. So he's been snake bitten a little bit by bad luck there. He hasn't always been great in big games. Last year he was, but in the past he wasn't, and then injuries. So. But I think, you know, you start stacking up the current quarterbacks, and we're talking just raw talent. He can run as well as Michael Vick in his prime, as well as Randall Cunningham, but he's a much better thrower. Better thrower. I mean, it's not even close than those guys. And maybe Steve Young would be another comp, and maybe that's the better comp because, like Steve Young, he's now learning how to be more of a passer than a runner, and he's got the skill to do it. So maybe Steve Young is a good comp. And Steve Young, it took him a while to win a Super Bowl as well. But I think Lamar's in that class. I do. I think he's a top 3 or 4 quarterback for sure right now. And I think the Hall of Fame is more likely than not. But he's got to stay healthy. That's the big key, I think, for him.
I think his legacy would be kind of finalized if he won a Super Bowl. Even if he got to a Super Bowl, you can say he got to the big game. And a couple things on him. You're talking about what a fine thrower he is. When he came into the league, believe it or not, that was one of the big question marks surrounding him, whether he could throw the ball at an NFL level. And it wasn't a question of arm strength, but it was a question of accuracy and so forth. But in the last 2-3 years, I mean, he has really honed his craft and become, like you said, one of the top 3 or 4 quarterbacks in the league. By the way, did you see the other day, I'm trying to remember which of his teammates it was. They went out to the community and met with some homeless people. Did you see that story?
I did.
No, he found some people that were homeless, and he took off their shoes and socks and bathed their feet, and then he gave them new shoes. And, you know, I mean, he said he's a Christian, and, man, I'll tell you what, that's pretty evident or clear that he is indeed a Christian.
That's quite a story. I did not hear that. No, I haven't heard that at all. That's fantastic. And you know, you talk about, you know, a guy who's got everything, and I think a lot of athletes give their money, but to do that is sort of next level stuff. That's great. That's great to hear. And I think Lamar Jackson has a lot of good to him, you know, and you mentioned there were questions about him throwing when he came into the league. I think that's because he was such a good runner. You instinctively think that.
Again, even back at Louisville as a thrower, I mean, going back to his days then, or did you?
He put up great numbers at Louisville as a thrower, but it was a college, you know, as a college quarterback, so you don't know how that's going to translate. I think there were questions, and part of it is that he did not have a rocket arm coming out. You know, he does more on accuracy, and also he throws such a catchable ball. It's uh-huh. so catchable, and the anticipatory skills, the way he can lead guys. His brain just works differently. You know, there just aren't a lot of quarterbacks like him. But yeah, I think coming out of Louisville, he was a project. You know, he was a raw athlete who didn't have a big, big arm, but put up good numbers. And it was a question of how's it going to work. And Gary, you know this. You know what it really comes down to with these guys? Who's willing to work at it? Who's willing to dig for 2 or 3 years, especially at the quarterback position, and work on the nuances of the position, not just practicing, not just the physical part. And, you know, I heard this term years ago, and I can't remember which general manager said it, but they said, if we're drafting a quarterback, I don't want a weight room junkie. I want a film junkie. You know, I don't need a guy to look a certain way. I need a guy who lives in the film room, who lives and dies with this stuff. And that's why a lot of these guys don't make it or we think are good. And I think Lamar is one of those guys. I think there's character there. You mentioned, you know, the off the field story. He's got the whole package. He really does. And by the way, he's doing a lot of this right now without any real wide receivers. They're basically surviving with tight ends and running backs.
I tend to agree with you, John, but I think Zay Flowers is a big time.
Zay Flowers is very good. He's very good. I mean, I meant that sort of overall. Flowers is more of a slot guy. But after that, it's basically Zay and 3 tight ends. You know, he doesn't have a wide receiver core like some of these other guys do.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You know, getting back to the Packers playoff picture for a second here, the Lions have 2 games, and one is at Minnesota, and another is at Chicago. Detroit's offense is crazy. It's like a video game. You know, they can light it up at any moment, as they showed the other day, but those aren't too easy games for them either, you know, especially going on the road. And, you know, maybe that Chicago game won't mean much to the Bears at that point. You know, who knows how it's going to shake out going to the final week, if they have anything to play for. But again, it's no slam dunk they're going to walk into the place and win.
No, I don't think so. I think they're both interesting games because, A, they're division games. So I can see both teams, even in Minnesota's case, they're out of it, or in Chicago's case, they may have already clinched, but I can see both teams going all out for the most part because it's a divisional game and there's rivalries there. You mentioned Detroit's offense. Their run game is so good, and especially the combination of the two guys. You know, Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs are so different, and I think they feed off each other, but they really didn't run the ball well against Pittsburgh. They struggled. Their run game has maybe come down a tick. And we know Minnesota's defense, as bad as that team has been, the defense has been very, very good. So that game, I think, has the potential to be a close game and a really good competitive game. And then, like I said, you know, Bears-Lions, it's a rivalry. Plus, you have Dan Campbell and Ben Johnson against each other. I don't think those two guys don't want to beat each other. They might be friends, but, you know, there's going to be some serious competitive vibes going on there. So I think Detroit probably loses one of the two. I don't know which one, but I think they do. Or the Packers are going to win one of the next two. Simple as that. I just don't think the odds are very good that the Packers don't make the playoffs. But I think Detroit's going to have their hands full. They, if they were playing an AFC team that was kind of out of it, like the Raiders or something,
yeah. You're
going to win because the Raiders have one foot out the door and there's no rivalry. They don't really care. And half the guys, you know, they're thinking about their vacation plans. But I don't think that's going to happen against the Vikings, even though the Vikings are out of it. Or the Bears, if they're already clinched as far as they can go.
Yeah, you were talking about Johnson and Campbell. You know, there might be a little, who knows what the relationship is now that they left, you know, and I don't know what your take is on Ben Johnson, but I find him extremely cocky for a guy that hasn't won anything. I mean, they've had a great season so far, but they still have to win a playoff game. They got to go deeper into the playoffs. His comments regarding LaFleur, you know, when he got the job, he said he, you know, loved beating LaFleur twice a year. And, I mean, what NFL coach comes out and makes comments like that? You very seldom see one coach rip another coach. But at the same point, John, as cocky as he is, some of the greatest coaches in NFL history were cocky.
I was going to say, I think he's an oddball. I think he's quirky. I think he's a little off up here. But Yes. Sometimes that's where the genius comes from. And I think this guy is great. What he's doing right now with Caleb Williams is borderline remarkable. Because I don't think Caleb Williams is a guy who puts in the work. Like we talked about, Lamar Jackson puts in the work and all these other guys. Yeah. To take that quarterback who clearly was not invested in anything last year, who still is very inaccurate at times, the fact that he's developing like he is impressive. And I just think guys who are just a little off like him, sometimes there's a genius that comes along with that. And the players feel it and they ride it. You know who he reminds me a little bit of is Jim Harbaugh, who's just a little off. It's that same weirdness in his personality. And sometimes those guys, like you said, the cockiness and the borderline, you know, oddball kind of, you know, where is this guy's brain? Often the greatest geniuses are not quite right. This guy's not with it. I mean, he's the kind of guy you want to be your head coach, but you don't want him over for dinner. I mean, in any other facet of life, I don't know. He seems like he's pretty out there, but he is really good at what he does, I think. Really good.
Yeah, you know what? I couldn't agree with you more. They are so creative on offense. I mean, for a guy that's just there, you know, for the first time.
It's amazing what he's done. You think about it. You think about that roster. You think about everything. It's incredible. And I think he's a good coach. As much of an offensive guru as he is, I think he has like a linebacker personality. And even the defensive guys, I think, feed off him, even though he's not coaching them as directly. Yeah. I don't think he's one of these quiet, I'm going to do my side of the ball kind of guys either. You know, I think the special teams guys and defensive guys feed off his personality as well. Even though schematically he might not be dealing with those guys as much. I could be wrong, but I think he's going to be maybe the next great one, you know, where he's going to dig in for 10 years. And
you know what? Packer fans probably don't want to hear that, but I tend to agree with you. And one of the things, too, is they finally got their act together on talent and assessment. If you look at that offense, they got a young quarterback, obviously, in Williams. Their receiving core is young. They got Odunze. And I'll tell you, a kid I really like coming out of the draft last year was Luther Burden III. He is coming on big time. They have two high-caliber tight ends. I don't think those guys are going anywhere for at least next 4 or 5 years.
And I think their offensive line is the best part of the offense.
And they brought those guys in, and that was a major credit to the front office, you know, bringing it in and say, hey, that's our weakness. We got to address it. But I think for the first time in a long, long time, you have to admit the Bears on the right track.
I think so. I personally, I might be a little lower on them than you right now. I still think some of those guys you mentioned, as good as they could be, are still in that developmental phase. I don't think they're as good as their record. I think Ben Johnson is maybe
I agree with that.
The lens. And Burton has all the talent in the world. His problems have been off the field.
Yeah.
Same character-wise. So let's see. If he grows up, though, like some guys do, he could be a very good player. Dunsey could be a good player. I don't know if he's quite there. And I think both the rookie tight end, Colson, is already good. Colson Loveland and Komet's pretty good. So, yeah, they have some pieces they got to add, but they're definitely going the right direction. And when you hire the right coach in this league, it's so – look at New England. Look at Chicago now, Ben Johnson. You can flip it pretty fast if you have the right guy. And if you hire the wrong guy, you end up like the Jets right now, or like Tennessee, or, coaching is – that the head coach is such a big deal in this league.
I can agree with you. Probably more so than any major sport, baseball.
Yeah.
Baseball.
Great.
You got so many personalities to deal with. And I'll tell you what, they get paid a lot of money. They can have their lot of money.
I mean, listen, it's been said before. I've talked about this on my show before. In baseball, it's about the GM and analytics. If you get the right guy, you're going to win. In the NBA, it's about the star. You need the one star. And in the NFL, it's head coach and quarterback.
Yes.
That's where you start, right? And then you build from there. If you hit on either the head coach or the quarterback, you're going to be in good shape. And usually one will make the other better, or they'll feed off each other, like what's going on, I think, with the Patriots now. And Chicago might be next. I don't, despite their record, I still don't believe in them. I still think their record is maybe more so a product of winning a lot of one-score games against bad teams. Their point differential is not very good, but
are they the Vikings last year?
Yes, I think they are. I think that's a great analogy. I think that's exactly what they are. But I'm not saying Chicago can't take that next step and build a stronger foundation, if that makes sense, and fill some holes and legitimately be good for a long time. We'll see about Caleb Williams. I still wonder about him over the long, long haul, but I think they got the head coach. They might have the quarterback, and then you kind of go from there. But that's a good analogy. I think they're one and done. That's my opinion. We'll see how it plays out.
Aftermaths, hopefully, are hoping that it's still one against them. And it could line up that way,
Well, let me ask you, if I said, okay, neutral field, forget records, forget everything, are the Packers a better team than the Bears right now?
Yes.
I think they are.
I'll get into that in a second. In light of all the injury patterns they've had, key injuries, and we'll expand on that a little bit as we go on here. But yeah, I do. I just think there's a significant edge yet at the quarterback position. Packers have a better running back. I think they have a better receiving core. The offensive line, maybe Bears right now, because the Packers
kind of
disheveled defensively overall. Packers got more talent. I like the Bears. They got a couple players, Montez Sweat. He can play. And they got a couple other guys. But overall, they are a better team. There isn't any question about it. And you know what? If the Packers would have had their act together, they might have blown them out last week. They were in the red zone 5 times, I believe. And
5 times, 9 points.
Yeah. So, total. And LaFleur's a good enough coach. The only time I really questioned him in the red zone, they had 1st and 5 at the first and goal from the 5, and they gave the ball 1 time to Jacobs. you got a touchdown maker, a guy inside the 5.
Yeah.
But other than that, I those things happen. You get in the red zone for whatever reason, maybe a bad play. Well, like the poor exchange too between.
On what you just said on that fourth down, when it was 4th down on that same drive.
Yeah.
I like the fact that he went for it, because if you don't get it, the Bears were on their own 5, so it's worth it to have the yard.
Yeah.
But then they throw it out to the sideline on 4th. Give it to Jacobs.
Exactly.
I know it's simple, and I sound simplistic, but that's one that's one of those things you don't overthink. It was the right call to go for it. Tell your offensive line, you've got to get us this yard. Give the ball to Jacobs and get the yard. And if you don't, okay, tip your cap. But you don't have to throw it out to the sideline, which was incomplete. That was my only issue with it.
And the only issues I have with LaFleur, the coach, he loves that sideline pass, and he loves jet sweeps. And I think for the most part, they've been useless this year. And then also, get back to your point about giving the ball to Jacobs down there.
I really, really believe it boosts the morale of offensive linemen. If you say, you know what, we're playing down and dirty, mano a mano, you know, and let's go
shoot.
It is, absolutely. And if you score, that just reinforces their confidence.
And you know what? You and I are talking about this, but here's the proof that it matters. Ask them, because every one of them, every offensive lineman will say, that's what we want to do.
Exactly.
I want to get that yard and a half. We want to go down and dirty.
These guys aren't pretty boys.
No, they don't want that out pass either.
No, exactly. So now it'll be interesting. Hey, one other thing while we're talking about that Bears game. Austin's hit on Love obviously drew a penalty. I'll tell you what, I would have fined him at minimum, maybe even suspended him. It was clear that he was going for it. He was targeting him. And for them to just say it was another play, I think it's absurd. And especially when it happens to a star player. You know, fans don't go to see Joe Smith. You know what I mean? They go there to see the stars, unless they're really diehard team fans. But, well, when that happens to a star player, I mean, not only hurts the Packers, it hurts the entire league.
Yeah, this is a tough one for me because I don't think there was anything horrifically malicious about that, but he still went helmet first, and he went helmet. But based on the optics of it, to me, I mean, I've seen a lot worse, for sure, where it's like, okay, he's trying to kill the guy.
I thought it was intentional. I really did.
You know, there might have been some intent to hurt him. Again, it's hard to get inside a guy's head. But body language to me was, he went in hard. Jordan Love kind of tucked his head down toward him. But he still went in helmet first. So, and they did call a roughing. It did cost him 15 yards. I think it was close. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I watched it a couple of times, and to me, it looked like it started off as something where he was coming in to make a play. And again, you know, you said you think he actually tried to hurt him. There were, I think that was the second or third roughing that game. I mean, there were other plays that in the end. The tone of the game was we're gonna hit hard and we're gonna maybe go overboard a little bit. So that would back up what you're saying there. I can't sit here and say no way he wasn't trying to hurt him, but I also don't think that was, you know, if we're going, you know, misdemeanors, felonies, you know, different. I don't know if that was a felony. I think that was more of a
it was more
of a misdemeanor, if you will. Yeah. And you know, maybe it was one of those where he said, "I'm going to come in hot. I'm going to see if I can hurt this guy." And then Love kind of tucked down, helmet to helmet, and we saw what happened. But it didn't look to me like some other situations I've seen in the league where, you know, a quarterback lets the ball go and there's a good step or two and a guy flies in helmet to helmet. He's trying to kill him. So I guess I'm somewhere in between on this thing. I think they called the roughing, which is good. I don't know if I would have done more than that. But if they find him, I don't think I'd throw my hands in the air and say, oh, that's horrible. I just think it's one of those calls that's kind of right in the middle. And I think they probably got it right. But I can't sit here and say he wasn't trying to hurt him. I don't know.
You know, everybody bashes X and some, you know, let's face, there's some really moronic comments on X. But somebody made a good point the other day about that play. And they said there was no reaction from the Packers offensive line. And this person who posted this on X said that, hey, why did the Packers offense have Love's back and go after the guy? And I thought it was a really good point. And I don't know if they didn't see what happened or whatever, but if I was a teammate and I saw that happening to one of my guys, I don't think I would have just stood there, you know?
Yeah. You know what, Pierre? I think that's the real story. I do. And I question it. I talked about this on my show as well. Here's the thing. Matt LaFleur went out of his way to tell guys, this is before the game, no extracurricular activities. Remember the situation that happened the previous week before the game?
Right.
So LaFleur may have planted a seed based on what had happened previously. And the guys were like, hey, he emphasized this. We can't do anything. But I also think it's a different situation when your quarterback gets knocked out of a game on a helmet to helmet. Even if it wasn't a felonious horrible situation, it's still pretty bad. And I mean, it's no different than a baseball. When your guy gets thrown at, it's your job as the other pitcher to throw at their best guy. You don't throw at his head.
Exactly.
Throw it. Exactly. And I think there could have been a statement made, you know, maybe not put somebody in a hospital kind of thing, but nobody even made a statement. And, you know, I remember back in the day, you know, TJ Lang had an incident like that where he went after somebody when Rodgers took a late hit, I think it was. That's just part of the deal. And Mike McCarthy at the time backed it. He said, hey, that's what we tell our guys to do. If you're going to take a cheap shot at our guy, at least something has to happen there.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that the previous week you had that situation and LaFleur emphatically told his players, do not engage this time. It can put us in trouble. I think that's why they held off. But I don't know. I think that's one where you almost have to take, you know, as an offensive lineman there, you have to say, my coach may come after me, may fine me, may bench me, but I'm going to do something about this. Yeah. Either way, I'm going to do something to somebody.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I'm thinking, like, teams need enforcers. I don't care what sport it is. Somebody that has that edge to them, plays a little, you know, little nasty at times. And I like the Packers' offensive line. I mean, I think the coaches have done a really good job of, you know, shuffling guys around. And Sean Ryan, I think, has done it. You know, he had that exchange. But he's done a nice job replacing Jenkins. I mean, I really thought they might have some issues after that. But I'm thinking, like, okay, if they want to get rid of Jenkins, Ryan can do the job. I don't see a huge drop-off, any drop-off. You know,
he'd be better.
Yeah, he might be.
He's better. He's the guy. Yeah. If Elton Jenkins came back next week, I don't think he has a starting job.
Yeah, they got to rectify the, you know, that when you get down to it, I'm mumbling over my words here. When you get down to it, they got talent on that offensive line. I mean, if they're healthy, that's a pretty darn good offensive line. And they proved that, you know, in recent years. And when they let Myers go, I thought they would take a hit at least for the first 4 or 5 weeks. And I thought they did. I thought they had some chemistry issues. But, you know, if they are healthy, that's a pretty darn good offensive line.
Yeah, Zach Tom's got to get healthy for that to happen. You know, about him, they're not great. Jordan Morgan was okay over there. Rasheed Walker has been pretty rough. He was better this week. But where they're a lot better, I think Sean Ryan has been a great discovery at center. And, you know, sometimes you accidentally bump into something. I think Anthony Belton's the real deal. He's not all the way there yet, but I think that guy is on his way to being a pretty good NFL right guard. That 340-pound guard, which a lot of teams don't go that route at that position, that just is a run-blocking menace and can be functional as a pass blocker. So I like he had a couple of pancakes on Sunday, or Saturday rather, that I saw on the run game. You know,
You got a keen eye there.
Yeah. Well, I was watching him. Sometimes I'll do that with an offensive lineman. Just let me pee. And I think I watched about 4 in a row, and maybe 3 of those 4 were run plays, and he bowled over his guy every time. And one of them was a pancake where the guy just put him right down. So I think I don't think he's all the way there yet. The guys who watch film more than I do in the media, you know who they are. I've talked to some of them on my show, and mostly what I'm hearing from those guys is it's inconsistent with Anthony Belton, but there's some pretty major upside. So I think he's a guy. I think Sean Ryan might be their center moving forward if they now decide to re-sign him. You know, Zach Tom's the real deal if he's healthy. And let's see if Jordan Morgan, if you go to left tackle, and I'm talking next year, maybe this year, and be that guy. So I agree. I think they're kind of finding their way there. One more year probably of Aaron Banks. You know, I just don't know if that was a great signing, but I think they'll probably stick with him for one more year. But they're getting there for sure. I think they wanted to revamp it, make it a bigger line, more of a power run-blocking line, and I think they're getting there. There's still some issues, but they're a heck of a lot better as a group than they were a month ago. I can tell you that much.
Yeah, you know what? I was down at the Senior Bowl a couple of years ago in Mobile, Alabama. I talked to some scouts down there, and they also ran into a couple of his teammates, Jordan Morgan I'm talking about. And they were talking, I mean, almost every one of them about how athletic he was, that he would be the prototypical left tackle. You know, he's had his struggled so far as a pro, but, you know, if he could iron down that spot, you know, it'd be huge. The only concern I have about that, John, is the Packers are at a point now where they're focused on getting to the Super Bowl, winning a Super Bowl. And when you have young, inexperienced offensive linemen, you're asking for trouble. And as much as of an upset as these guys have, it's not about the future to me anymore. It's about the present. They got to be a little careful. I mean,
I was in your boat probably 2 weeks ago, very much so. But I think with Micah Parsons out and Tucker Kraft long gone now, and even Devonta Wyatt out, I think this is a good team. I think the Packers are better than Chicago right now. I think they're better than probably whoever wins the NFC South. I mean, I think they can make a playoff run, meaning win a game, maybe two. I don't think it's a Super Bowl winning team anymore, though. I think it's gone. You're not going to, you know, rebuild here because they got a shot to certainly get to the playoffs and make a run. I've turned my attention a little bit toward next year in the sense that I think maybe there's a real deal window. If Micah Parsons is back by early October, which seems realistic, and he's himself, and Jordan Love, who I absolutely believe in now. I mean, he's changed my mind substantially. I think you have all the pieces, and Jordan Morgan will get a shot at left tackle next year. You're probably looking at one more year of Josh Jacobs, one more year at least of Xavier McKinney, maybe more for him. Evan Williams has become a really good safety. I don't know if it's a Super Bowl winning team or Super Bowl team this year based on not having Micah Parsons. But you know what? The one argument against that would be he still got Jeff Hathaway. I think he's been great. I think there's a certain persona he brings that maybe LaFleur doesn't, which is why I think Hathaway's going to get a head coaching job. You know, I don't know about you, but I thought Hathaway coached a great game on Saturday night, including the game-tying touchdown the Bears had. He called the perfect blitz. Everybody was dialed into their spot except Keyshawn Nixon went the wrong way. What do you think of Hathaway? I think he's been really good.
Yeah, I'm definitely in the minority here. I get it. But first of all, as far as him becoming a head coach, I don't know if people looked at his record at Boston College. He was there 4 years. He was Luke Fickell.
You know?
And I'm not saying, I don't know what the circumstances were there, you know, if he wasn't able to get talent or whatever the deal is. But he didn't wow me at all as a college head coach. And all of a sudden, last year, I thought, okay, he did a pretty nice job, but they played a lot of bad teams, a lot of bad quarterbacks. And then all of a sudden, you got Micah Parsons, you got an experienced Quay Walker, you have an experienced Edgerrin Cooper, you bring in McKinney, and I'll tell you what, John, you could be a pretty darn good coordinator at that point. I mean, when you have Pro Bowl caliber players at all three levels, you should be good. But here's the thing that really has gnawed me about. Happily, there's been at least two or three games this year where the Packers were ahead in the fourth quarter and the Packer defense couldn't withstand, you know, the comeback. And then against the Bears on that last drive in regulation, he went four straight times with a four-man rush and he got beat on every one of them. It's like there was no pressure on Caleb Williams. And I'm thinking, look, you see some of these coordinators, the good ones, they'll corner blitz, they'll safety blitz, they'll bring two linebackers. And he has a penchant for playing it really ultra-conservative. And I think he's at the right place at the right time with the right talent.
You know what's interesting about that, too, and not to exonerate him, I guess, based on what you're saying, but it's interesting because really until this week, they haven't had a blitz ever. You know, he was able to run a totally different defense this year because of Micah Parsons. He just goes four every time and it didn't matter. Last year, they had to send five every time or more. If you want to throw the knock of they've struggled late in games, I think you can. But I think generally, especially last year when they didn't have Micah, he did a lot last year without a great talented group, I think, or certainly without much of a pass rush, and he wasn't given much of a pass rush.
It definitely says that. Yeah.
But I think he's good at what he does, and I think the players believe in him, you know. And, not to compare anybody to Joe Barry, but I think you're going from as bad of a coordinator as you could have in Joe Barry to a guy who brings a different intensity, I think is a little more sophisticated. And I think he's done a great job. The problem this past week was Keyshawn Nixon covered the wrong guy.
How about that pass play where and I'm trying to remember the receiver, Bears receiver, that ran between the two guys. It was Nixon and it was Hobbs.
Yes.
And neither one decided to pick him up, and he was wide open.
I think what happened on that play is the receivers crossed. You know, they were twin receivers next to each other, and they crossed.
Yeah.
And in that situation, I think the corner is supposed to take the other guy then, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think Nate Hobbs took the right guy. I think he transferred over to the other guy, and Keyshawn Nixon, instead of transferring to the other guy, stayed with the original guy.
Yeah,
so right. When the receivers cross, the two corners are supposed to stay where they are and take the other guy, and they both went after. I don't think it was on. I think Hobbs did the right thing, and Keyshawn Nixon just literally cut the wrong way. And then you got a fifth-string wide receiver wide open in the corner of the end zone. Tie ball game.
Yeah, precisely. Getting back to the Packers quarterback situation, how it's up in the air. And I mean, it's like you said, it's conceivable we might not have Love or Willis. And even if they have one of them, you still have to have that backup guy behind them. But when did you come to lacrosse? Or maybe let me put it this way. Do you remember Tom Matte from the old Baltimore Colts?
I don't know.
You can tell I'm an old man. I remember these games, but it was like in the mid-60s, and Tom Matte was a running back, although he played quarterback for the legendary Woody Hayes at Ohio State. But Johnny Unitas was hurt, and his backup, Gary Kwaza, was hurt, and he had to play several games. And one of them was against the Packers in the 65 playoffs. And he threw the ball just a few times, nothing special, but I think he threw it maybe 10, 12 times and didn't even have 50 yards. But it kind of reminded me of that situation where what do you do? But the point to all this is that Matte at least played quarterback at some point in his career on a college level. With Jaden Reed and with Josh Jacobs, I don't think they did, have they? I mean, that's the best of my knowledge.
I don't think so. I think Jaden Reed maybe got recruited, maybe, or was recruited as an athlete. I do think he was I think Jaden Reed was a really good high school quarterback. I mean, high state. But, you know, I mean, you've been at practice before where once in a while you'll see a receiver throw the ball and you're like, wow, that guy's, you know, maybe not NFL caliber, but he can spin it pretty good. My guess is in both cases, that's all you got. And I think with Reed, or I guess with Jacobs too, the advantage of having them as your emergency quarterback is they can run. Both of them can, you know, in play. So yeah. That's what you almost have to do is just find a guy who can run and throws well enough, can dump off a pass here and there. But they came close to that. I don't know if Malik Willis, you know, had another quarter in him if the game would have kept going. I mean, they got to overtime and the injury happened, but they were close to that for sure.
Yeah. And even if they went to Clayton Toon, I'm sure everybody's heard of him, but he was like a fifth round pick by Arizona a couple years ago. He was a fifth round pick at least.
Yeah, about that. And yeah, Clayton Toon has played a little bit in the league. He hasn't been great. And,
right.
You know, I was thinking about this, Gary, and I don't know if it would be a good option, but I was wondering if Sean Clifford was still available on a practice squad. I mean, at least he knows the system inside and out.
Right.
And he's had a couple of training camps. Maybe that would be an option, too, if both main quarterbacks can't go. Jordan Love is out and Willis is outside questionable and they got to get another body in. I don't know. I mean, last I heard, Sean Clifford was on, was it Cleveland's practice squad, I think, or Cincinnati?
Yeah.
He was on a practice squad this year for sure. And maybe he still is. I don't think he's on a roster, though. So either way, that might be a guy to kick the tires on. He knows the system. He knows the culture. And if you want to bring in another guy, at least, maybe he's it.
What a fascinating angle to this game, though, right? I mean, that would be absolutely crazy if they started that kid. But, you know, that's the NFL. You know, talking about Matt LaFleur a little bit, that guy's done a hell of a job. As I said at the outside of the Packer podcast, 5 of the last 6 years, they made the playoffs. It looks like 6 out of 7. And this year, I think, I know he had some hiccups along the way. There were a couple games they probably should have won, but that's par for the course in the NFL these days. But when you think that he didn't have Tucker Kraft, he didn't have Elton Jenkins, he didn't have Wyatt, now he doesn't have Parsons. Jacobs is banged up. They don't have a backup tight end. I think he's done a hell of a job. And, you know, there's always going to be his critics out there saying, oh, he didn't win a Super Bowl. You're going to hear it again. When you lose four Pro Bowl caliber players, how many teams have a prayer? You know, take four of your best players off of any team. And how are they going to be? I think he's just done a terrific job.
Yeah, I think the bottom line with Matt LaFleur is it's a quarterback league, and he handles quarterbacks as well as any coach in football. And that includes Sean McVay.
Yeah.
That includes Shanahan. He is great with quarterbacks. Look at the resume so far. Remember, Aaron Rodgers was not playing well before Matt LaFleur got there. Remember, he had that bad year the season before with McCarthy. I think he got really stale with McCarthy at the end. And Matt LaFleur came in, and I'm not saying he's responsible for Aaron Rodgers' greatness, but he's definitely responsible for turning him back around for those couple of years when he won those two MVPs. He turned Aaron Rodgers' career back around, and especially the second year, if you look at the numbers with LaFleur and Rodgers, where Rodgers kind of ran LaFleur's offense for a change, and Rodgers was magic that year. That was maybe his best year ever, and he wasn't playing well those last couple of years with McCarthy. They jumped Jordan Love, who has been completely developed by Matt LaFleur. Look at that developmental process. A raw prospect who looked like he might be a bust at certain points, who's become a really good quarterback. And then I'll even throw Malik Willis at you. Look at Malik Willis he's done when he's played. Matt LaFleur designed an offense specifically for Malik Willis on the fly last year, and Willis was great. So that's the bottom line with Matt LaFleur. Is he the best all-around coach in the world when it comes to working with defenses and special teams? Probably not. Is he the toughest guy in the world? Probably not, or he would have fired Joe Barry after a season. So he's got his weaknesses, but he is a fantastic offensive coach, and I would even double down and say he's an even better quarterback developer. He's 3 for 3 because Rodgers counts. You know, had McCarthy stayed another 5 years, I don't think Rodgers wins two more MVPs the way things were going. I think LaFleur is great at what matters most in the NFL, and that's quarterbacks and developing quarterbacks and running an offense.
Yeah, you nailed it with Malik Willis, because people forget this. Malik Willis came to the Packers for a 7th-round pick. I mean, if people thought this kid was going to be any good, they would have gave up a 2nd, 3rd, 4th-round pick, right?
Gary, he was the 3rd-string quarterback in Tennessee, one of the worst quarterback rooms in the league, and they gave up on him. The worst team in the league with the worst quarterback room gave up on him, and he's a 3rd-stringer. And not only did LaFleur turn Malik Willis into what he is, but he had the aptitude, along with Gutekunst, to know that he was worth going after and getting. I think a lot of people were like, why would you even bring that guy in?
I'll be one of them. I questioned it. I thought, how good is this guy? I thought he was a bust, you know, and it goes back where you make premature observations, you know. But again, now today, now turn around, John, let me ask you. Obviously, Willis is a free agent this summer. But if they would trade him, or could have traded him, what could they get? 3rd-round pick at worst?
Third or fourth.
Yeah,
I think that's probably what it would have been. You know, I think an even bigger question is, what is he going to be worth in the open market? Because he's going to hit the market.
He's going to have some suitors.
Is he going to have a chance to start, even if it's as a bridge quarterback somewhere? I think there's a chance, or maybe a chance to compete with somebody.
Yeah.
You know, like whether it's the Jets or, you know, the Raiders or a team like that that might be looking for somebody as a bridge quarterback. I think he might get a shot. I think he's priced himself out of being Green Bay's backup after this year. I don't think he'll stay, even if they give him a good offer, because he might be good enough to start somewhere. I wouldn't guarantee it, but I think he has a chance.
No, I mean, he looked really good. I mean, the other day, he didn't look like this run-of-the-mill guy. I mean, he had a quality performance. Hey, just a couple quick questions here, John, and I appreciate your time. Being up in the Minneapolis area, what's the state of Vikings fans? They had super high expectations this year, and you know, barring a miracle, they're not going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think the biggest question there is the quarterback situation. And I think the state of Viking fan is, how the heck did we let Sam Darnold go? What on earth were we thinking, I'll say, from their standpoint? I think the one saving grace is that Brian Flores has been so good with that defense that it keeps him in games. And I still think Kevin O'Connell is highly respected as an offensive coach. I just think they missed on JJ. I do. And part of the league is being healthy, too. You can't just say, well, he's only been hurt. I mean, he's now had, I think, three injuries since he's been there.
Is that what it is?
So, you know, part of ability is availability, as they say. As Bill Parcells used to say, mostly when he's played, he has not looked the part at all. He's looked overwhelmed by the speed of the NFL. Now, you got to give the guy time still in that respect. But I think the state of Viking fans is pretty low right now because of the quarterback situation. And they had Sam Darnold, who didn't exactly sign like a multi-million dollar deal to go to Seattle. Like, it was basically a 2-year deal. And even the second year wasn't totally guaranteed. I think they could have had him for that. And on top of it, you also, and, you know, I know this is water under the bridge, but Aaron Rodgers, I think, wanted to play there. I do. Rodgers been there with that defense. I think Aaron would probably be doing there about what he's doing in Pittsburgh right now. They'd probably have a winning record. They'd probably be a playoff team with that defense and Brian Flores. And can you imagine Rodgers with that receiving group too? I mean,
you'd be waiting the punt. Yep.
They had two shots and they failed on both of them. No, I was just going to say they stuck with JJ.
Yeah, no, I was critical of that move from the get-go. He had a fabulous year, and everybody said, oh, he can't win the big game. And if he lost, watch that last playoff game, you could add Joe Montana back there. It wouldn't the matter. He was getting pressured almost, and every time he went back to throw, I mean, it was ridiculous. And now he's proving out in Seattle that I'm not saying he's going to win the MVP, but, you know, he's going to be drawing some considerations. He's had another great year. And, you know, just one other thing. I was going to say, if I was the Vikings, I would have re-signed Darnold and brought McCarthy along, just like the past.
That's what we were saying on our show. Same thing. Nobody was saying get rid of McCarthy. They should have put McCarthy on the Jordan Love plan and said, yeah, this is going to be a 3-year project. We accidentally ran into a really good quarterback. Darnold was only 27 years old when he got there. And yeah, it wasn't like he was a 34-year-old veteran. They could have said, we've got our franchise guy here. We'll keep McCarthy for a couple more years, and we'll have a great insurance policy if Darnold doesn't work out. And if Darnold does work out, then we have a really good problem on our hands. You know, it's okay to deviate from the plan when you accidentally run into something. And I think, you know, you mentioned that playoff game. I always thought that was a dopey narrative for people who just wanted something to talk about. The guy was phenomenal for 10 or 12 games,
exactly.
And the traits were great. It wasn't like Case Keenum, you know, where you questioned the traits a little bit. The traits were there. The pedigree was there. The size, the youth. Like I said, he was 27 years old. They gave up on him way too soon. We said the same thing on our show, and we were saying it like in the spring. Like, bring Darnold back and develop McCarthy.
And to it.
Just like the Packers did with Jordan Love.
Yeah.
You know? They should have done it. I think they got cute. They wanted to use the money on offensive and defensive linemen and free agency, which, yeah, they got some guys, but was it worth it?
Not.
You don't have a quarterback now, so really that other stuff doesn't matter.
Yeah. Hey, one other quick question I want to throw at you. Being at lacrosse, I don't know how many of our listeners know this, but Packers general manager John Gutekunst went to UW lacrosse, and is he kind of considered a legend in lacrosse now?
He definitely has a place here. I know that. You know, I know a lot of people at UW well, you know, throughout the athletic department, and he's highly respected. You know, it's an interesting story because he was there as a coach. He was an assistant, like a lower level assistant coach, maybe even a grad assistant at the time. But he spent, I think he spent 2 or 3 full years here. So it wasn't like a real quick thing. This was his home for a while, and he's talked about it since. It's, you know, it's one of those things you like to claim a guy. You know, he wasn't famous when he was here. Nobody really knew the direction he was going. But, and I'll tell you one thing about Gutekunst, he's come back he doesn't physically come back a lot, but he's done a lot of stuff with UWL when he's asked to. And I know he, I know this for sure, and it's kind of a cool thing. Whenever the UWL football team is traveling east somewhere for a non-conference game, they will go to Green Bay, and they're on the field, they're watching practice, and they've even practiced at the facilities. Gutekunst basically opens it up and spends a lot of time with the players, and I think even some. I think one of the times LaFleur actually spent some time with the team, with the UWL football team. So Gutekunst is very, I mean, that's where he coached, obviously. So whenever they go out east for, and I think this has happened like maybe two or three times, the doors open in Green Bay. Like Gutekunst is like, if you want to come to practice, watch our guys practice, talk to LaFleur, whatever, doors open. And they've taken him up a couple times on that. So he's been really loyal to UWL.
Oh, it's good to hear that, you know, he's maintained a relationship with the people that were helpful of him getting to where he is. Hey, one of these days they might rename a street Gutekunst Way or something.
Maybe. Yeah. You know, we've got a couple of them here, not a ton of them, but, you know, Damian Miller is a homegrown guy that still lives in the community. He's popping around all the time. Yeah. Craig Newsom lives out here now. You remember Craig Newsom?
Absolutely.
And he's always hanging around. He was coaching high school football for years here. So there's a couple of course, Max Scherzer played a summer here. Baseball, so we claim him a little bit too. So we got a couple. Johnny Davis, Badger legend, is a lacrosse guy, so we got a few for sure.
Absolutely. Not to mention John Papadopoulos.
Well, maybe not close to that level.
Yeah. Hey, what? I lied. I have one other thing. I got to get your prediction on Saturday's game, Packers-Ravens, and a score.
Oh, boy. It's a little tough right now because of the quarterback situation, but I'm going to take a shot at this, and I'll factor in the possibility that Jordan Love plays or Malik Willis plays and he's healthy, and I'm still going to say Baltimore wins this game, but I think it's going to be close. Lamar's going to play. Derrick Henry's having a great season, and the Packers have had a hard time stopping the run, and Baltimore needs this game. This is a playoff game for them. For the Packers, it's really important, but it's not a playoff game. You know, the Packers, theoretically, the Packers can lose this game, and if Detroit loses, the Packers are in anyway. I think Baltimore wins it, but it's a close one-score game.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a close game as well. I got the Packers 20-17 over the Ravens. Again, it's going to come down to which quarterbacks plays or don't play, and maybe they won't botch up the exchange or have cornerbacks miscommunicate this time around. But anyways, hey, I'll tell you what, John, it was great spending time with you. Thanks for taking time from your busy schedule and your family to chat today. It was fantastic, and I want to thank you, and I want to thank our listeners. Take care and all the best.
Gary, I appreciate it. I'll come on anytime. Thank you.
For more sports news, check back every Tuesday for our latest show. You can also follow Gary on Twitter @GaryWoofel and WoofelsPressBox.com.